Sr. The interview is being conducted on March 16th, 1983. The interview is being conducted at Dr. Pittman's home at 1430 Northwest 228th in Hillsboro. The interviewer is Linda Dodds for the Washington County Historical Society. Dr. Pittman, I understand that your family has been in Washington County for a long time, and that your great-grandfather, Dr. Wilson Bowlby, came here. I read that he crossed the trail in 1852. Can you tell me something about Dr. Bowlby?
Yes, Dr. Bowlby went to medical school in New York, and he was a long time in crossing the plains, but he came out served by degrees in Illinois first for a while, and then eventually came across the covered wagon in 1852. He settled in Portland first for one year, and then he came out to Forest Gold, and he took up a homestead out south of Cornelius and lived out there for a time.
Now, he bought his homestead. He wasn't a donation land claim owner.
He was a donation land claim.
Oh, he was?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. They disputed that at the museum, but I have a claim number and so forth. And they had a claim. He did not have the 648 acres there. When I first examined it, but he must have sold off part of it. I don't know. But he was a Jewish land claim holder and filed a deed. He moved to Forest Grove in about 10 years. So to go to the university.
Do you know why he came here in the first place, to Oregon, that is?
I don't know a definite reason, but it wasn't other people. There was that urge to go west, you know, and acquire land, of course, and take up a homestead in the green valleys of the Oregon country. And so he was one of those that succumbed to that. And,
was he a practicing doctor in New York?
Yes. In the east, along the way, probably in New Jersey, and then and I think in Ohio or someplace. But he kept into wanting to go west, so he just kept moving until they finally crossed the plains.
Do you know if Dr. Bowlby had relatives here in the area when he came?
None of them had come ahead of him. He was the only Bowlby that crossed the plains that I know of.
Mm-hmm.
Was he the first doctor in Hillsboro?
Oh, no. There'd been others ahead of him. Dr. Geiger is one I know of. The first one, I think.
Geiger?
Geiger, mm-hmm. in the Forest Grove area. He was an early doctor out here. But, oh, I don't know. There were other doctors in the area that come before him. Of course, he went and practiced in Forest Grove then. And there were doctors in Hillsboro, that's who all they were.
When Dr. Bowlby settled his land claim, was he working the land, or was he practicing medicine, or was he doing both? Do you know?
Well, probably doing both, although he had several sons who became the farmers. And, of course, that was true of the early doctors, that they were in the practice to make a living, so they usually had farms or something, had some trade that supplemented their income. But he probably did some farming in the early days.
Do you know why he decided to relocate in Forest Grove? You mentioned his... Did you say his son was going to Forest Grove?
No, to educate his children.
Oh, to educate them.
Yes. Because of Pacific University.
So, did the children then stay in the area?
Yes. Well, one of them stayed on the farm. My grandfather, Theodore Wolfe.
Now, Theodore had 10 children, did he not?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And I have in my notes that he died in 1894. So he had passed on some time before you were born?
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh.
Wait, 94?
I have it. He died in 1894. That could be incorrect.
I think the old doctor died in 1995 then.
Uh-huh.
It could be he died first, yeah.
Well, this is Theodore I'm talking
Theodore,
about.
Theodore, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And then I have that his children were J.Q.A. and Theodore and Sarah were the children of Dr. Bowlby.
Dr. Bowlby, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then Theodore was your grandfather.
Yes.
And he had 10 children, and your father was among those children?
No.
Wasn't it your mother?
My mother.
Right.
Yeah.
And what was her name?
Emily.
Emily. And how was she placed among the children? Do you recall?
Well, let's see if I can...
Well... Did Emily grow up on Theodore's farm near Hillsboro?
Yes.
She did.
Yes, she grew up on the farm there. Yes, there she met my father. He lived up on Chiham Mountain about 1874 or 75. He lived up on Chiham Mountain Top School. They all went to school up there. He was also one of the 10 children.
And what was your father's name?
Well,
sometimes those middle names get lost.
How did Emily Bowlby and William Pittman meet then?
Well, he was a lawyer at that time. He helped clear the farm, hold the farm. That was all timber. Most of it was timber, so he logged off most of the timber there. And they went there.
This was a claim where, a lot, timber lot where?
It was south of the hill. Along Town Road.
Is this near the Bowlby property? Or are you talking about that it was on the Bowlby property?
It was Bowlby property.
Oh, it was,
yes,
okay.
Yes, it's the Bowlby farm.
So your father, you mentioned your father was a logger then. Did he have other professions besides the logger?
No. No, he stayed with logging most of his life, actually.
So they married, and did they live on that property then?
No. They lived in Denver.
They did, oh, in town there. So then they obviously had children.
Yes,
now, how did you fit into that picture?
I was number five.
Five.
Yeah. Huh? And there's still three of them. And two sisters.
Mrs. Rush.
Yeah, Mrs. Rush and Winnie. Good.
So
then
I didn't realize that you were raised right in Hillsboro, right? What kind of a home did your family have there?
Well, we lived in rented house. And then we built on it right in the corner. And now the hospital property. We had a house that needs a fish line.
What sort of a house was it?
It's a frame building, a two-story frame house.
And where did you go to school?
Hillsboro.
How did you get to school?
Walk, yeah. There's, well, I did turn it in there for 2 blocks. I first school I went to was now David Hillsboro, Oak Street. So that's the short distance from there. And the high school ended with down to 3rd Street, which is and now a part of it is the grade school complex there.
Part of the bridge?
Part of a grade school.
Oh, grade school. Well, see, this would have been about, what, 1906 you would have gone to school, 1907 to 12 years, 1919 or so, around
here. Well, I went until 1970, then I went to service.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you about that in a minute, but I was first going to ask you about what Hillsboro was like when you were a youngster. What do you remember about downtown Hillsboro and some of the activities there and that sort of thing?
Well, I remember at first I lived just over in another place, but I can remember
They lived over on the baseline, so right back at the Methodist Church, the third baseline. And at that time we had the plank roads in Hillsboro. The streets were plank, as seen in the photographs. When Lincoln said in Rome, the stallion parade on Main Street in the 30 years. And the street was all plank, plank. So it was diagonal pattern. And it was very useful. He brought the mud. I remember the other day before we had a new paper. Just a plank road.
What were the stores like? What kind of shops were there?
Well, general merchandise for each other. No specials. What I think of was a shoe store. And mercantile store. And it was a men's store too.
Now a young boy would know about that, wouldn't he?
Yes.
Is there anything you remember about the buildings,
anything, looking at the
new, especially grand buildings that they built during the time that you were a boy?
No, they built, some of the old buildings, of course, still there, the Audubon building on the third main, and the building of the Lincoln Center. 70 kilometers on the second main. It was, that was built in 1890, I'm sure. They ordered the bank across the street, it was the old Commercial National Bank. The building has been torn down, replaced with the town, which is the newer central bank. There was a Washington Hotel on the third and main, two, three stories. Frame building, it's building blocks, it'll be outside of the frame inside. But a three story building there, it was only a three story building. Anyway, Dr. Tamsey built the hotel.
Dr.
Tamsey.
Was he a medical doctor?
Yes, he was.
Was that the kind of typical small town hotel where lots of things happened and where everyone stayed because it was the only place in town and that sort of thing? That type of hotel?
Well, yes, it was. Hotels did a pretty good business in those days. You traveled to sales, remember, on the roads and on that.
Oh, the drummers.
The drummers were behind it. And they kept hotels occupied. Every small town had some kind of hotel. Or school had one. On the Carlton, I think, had it. Gambion, or had a hotel. They had a pretty good business, you know. Travel was difficult. So we had to stay overnight for help.
Now, lots of towns had special activities. They had all kinds of festivals and social things like that. Parade sometimes. Are there any events such as that you might recall
in Illinois? Well, it was had a 4th of July parade, of course, and there was a county fair once a year. It was held in the streets of Oklahoma.
How did they host it in the streets?
We had tents. Good tents.
And they just pitched them right there in the middle of the street?
Yeah, they threw it off the street.
And they could they bring the livestock in there and everything?
I presume they did. I don't remember if it was livestock, but they had prepared it in the carnivals and that sort of thing.
Well, you were talking to me just a moment ago about World War I, and I know you had some kind of a unusual experience, except for a young boy, anyway, during World War I. Could you tell me about that?
Well, that occurred, of course, when I was in high school, during my sophomore year. And, well, before war was declared, actually, one of the seniors had been a member of the National Guard. And he came out in uniform and he got a number of other seniors, juniors, to join the National Guard, which was just before war was declared. Numerous things that would happen again. And I think in after two, 3 days, about 25 had signed up. And I got the urge to go along with them. I hated to stay home and learn all those fellows going in the service. Looked like, you know, a big adventure at that time. And so, I got my mother's permission to go in. I was 16 at the time. And that was 1917. I was 16, so I had to push my hands up, but didn't care about something. He told me, well, he didn't have to always have to have his first two. So, if you're big enough, so I got in service. 25 of us in high school in the Company B. It became Company B, the 162nd Infantry, the old 3rd Oregon, the National Guard. It became federalized. 162nd Infantry is an important 1st Division. So we had a little training. Of course, they stayed a month or so at the Department of Armory and did guard duty on the bridge. That's the beginning to have some trouble with the wall beds, which is industrial workers from America.
Oh, the wobblies.
The
wobblies.
Sure. And so we were doing guard duty on the bridges and along the railroads and traveling for a while. And then we went out to Camp Whitcomb for that period of training out there. And then they moved us up into Washington. And we were on doing guard duty along the railroads and irrigation zones in central Washington.
I didn't realize the wobblies were agitating just right there in that pre-war period.
That's when you're active, yeah. Yeah, that's when it was. And they didn't do anything. They were afraid they were going to. So we were up beyond guard duty along there. I was out of the outpost of Thorpe, which is out of the Elms. Camped out there in the gardening irrigation field. We patrolled up and down the prison. They shoot with chips, but nothing ever happened. Anyway, they did round up a few probably had barbed wire enclosure for a while, but nothing ever happened. So then finally we gave up. We went to camp with him for a while, some more training, and then we went to Camp Mills in New York.
Camp Mills?
Yeah, Long Island, New York. Went to New York in December, or November sometime. It was kind of cold over there, anyway. We were there in training for about a month, and then we embarked for France. December 12th, I think it was. Got to San Jose there on Christmas Day. And zigged a course across the ocean. And we didn't have any trouble, but they said separate at one time. And we had a convoy of destroyers.
Torpedo
from the Brian, and just went right behind one of the ships, and then the convoy was in there. There was the only one that happened. And I guess they must have got that submarine. Destroyed.
What was your rank at that time?
Oh, this is just private. Now, I never got beyond private first class.
Uh-huh.
We are on it. It was Georgia Patrol, and we sent there for 2 or 3 months, and then we went up to a camp, and then we went to training. Finally, they decided to use our division for replacement. So I was sent up to the company G, the 18th Infantry, 1st Division. And I saw service there. Final battle of the morning, and this is awesome. There we are. I was at the well-known battle, but the first American troop activity was Captain Kent.
Yes, but there is a name for that
phenomena, I believe.
Now, you were mentioning these battles. Where were you when the armistice was signed?
Was in the Convention Hospital.
Oh, you had already. You better tell me about that.
I didn't last too long in the front line. There had one little break after Canandaigua. July, that they moved that in the worst behind the line. And then July the 14th, we were some of the big to go down to Paris to parade in the parade. So I got to had a few days in Paris. We wanted to put on the money. So we had to sell extra shirts and raincoats and shoes and that. Yeah, we were on the bar them in on the taverns. Get that man to go downtown and look around a bit. But then after we came back from Paris, we went back into the lines again. We had one of these all-night marches, which I discovered I could sleep while I was walking, except that I started to fall over and bump somebody ahead of me. But just to get that tired for the walking, go to sleep. Stop for 5 minutes, you lie down on the pile of rocks and go to sleep. Sleep any place. After walking all night, we got to stay in the key for about 3 or 4 hours, and then at daylight we had to go to the big garage and we took off. We were tall in the garage. Very little fighting at the very end. The garage was just the end of the trench was just wiped out. There was nothing left of it. And right on the way back. So, but all I saw was German prisoners that surrendered after the garage had passed over. They'd be in a deep hole, a dugout or something, and they'd come out with their hands up. And so that was a fairly easy situation for us. And we had a tremendous barrage. We didn't take any artillery over ourselves. We just took the troops with rifles. That's all we did. There were a lot of these French 75s, French guns, and our artillery had these guns and just lined up the hill, and they could just load and shoot those things like a machine. And they threw down this ribbon barrage. But anyway, finally, it was the enemy, a shell that got me. When we were advancing in the column, a single file, advancing several paces apart, advancing on the railroad. And one of the shells had been going over us, one of them dropped short and landed right in the pile. Shell went to be with the enemy, and one piece of shell got me in the thigh. We didn't hear it coming. Usually, you could hear the shells coming, and if the noise seemed to increase in intensity, then it was going to come close to it. but if it didn't increase, it was going to go on over. You know, just make that, you always tell when they're going over, when they're going to come close. And when they're going to come close, it would hit the ground. But we didn't hear this in time. It came over the hill or something. Must have fired from the first rope, right? Anyway, a piece of shell that had come to the side. And that was the end of my fighting. So I had quite a good trip back. I got to Paris again, but this time in Vientos. Went to horse train. That was a bumpy ride. In the French train. After spending a night on a stretcher outside at the railroad station, waiting for the train to be up, and then they got in Paris. The following night, and in the surgery, twice a year after that, so far to Sweden, they carry all the damaged flesh. But drains and irrigated and taken solution a couple of times a day. That was quite an ordeal. And it took a long time to heal, of course. That was the real secondary intention because it was over and over. Because of the possible infections. So I spent a lot of time in the hospital that I just spent. After 3 days in the Paris hospital, and I was sent on down to a hospital in Limoges. Interesting, then, there, when I was in the hospital in Limoges, they had a flu epidemic in there.
Was this the Spanish influenza?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And I was become ambulatory. And we walked around a bit, and I walked downtown and across an old phone bridge from the city. And when I was going to downtown, I met Haskell Carter in Millsbrook. He was in the place off, you know, just going down the road away there. He'd been hospitalized with flu and pneumonia. And recovery. It was odd to meet him. One place over there, down south of Paris. We both arrived in the hospital at the same time. And he's the only one I met for a long time. After the move from the police hospital to the Convalescent Hospital, the whole armory barracks, the stone armory barracks, on the edge of the north. And I was working on it pretty well, living some good. This army barracks on the arm system. This is the bulk arm system, and the next day it's two arm systems. And then, they made something in what's called casualty companies. I sent back to Bordeaux, and waited there a few weeks for a ship. That sailed on again just before Christmas. A year after my arrival.
So you were there just a year
then? Just a year. And my wife was working in the city, and then I could get married.
Camp Merritt?
Merritt. There about a month. Taking the camp. What you wish
sound as if you took all of that experience philosophically.
Yeah.
There was that whole generation after the war that suffered from the disillusionment of world wars. They were all very upset by it.
Well, not so much so after that war, or even after second. After the Vietnam War, that was true. That was a war without purpose. We had been indoctrinated with the fear that we were, and we did eventually drive the Germans out of France. We saved France. And we turned the tide. We got there, we put a million Americans in. The Germans had gotten down pretty close to Paris on the Marne there. Shell theory.
Tell me, what happened when you got home? How had things changed, or what did you decide to do? Did you formulate any plans about what you hoped to accomplish when you came back, or did the war influence you in any way?
Yes, it had an influence on it, I'm sure. I had decided that I wasn't going to be a private in the rear rank the rest of my life. And then I was going to advance somewhere. And so I came back, and my family had moved to Port. And I stayed in there a week. And that was not home for me. So I moved back out to the hill. And I lived with my brothers. I flipped back and lived with him for a while. And I started in high school.
Why did you decide to start high school again?
Well, I was.
Did your parents feel strongly about you completing school? Or just wondered if that was family values. Did your brothers and sisters go to not finish high school? Do you know?
That's all it is. You know, the girls finished high school. My brother didn't. His health was bad. He quit school and went out and worked on the farm. Build up again physically. Been on the lip of working the gold farm. But my sisters had went to work various kinds. One of them became a comptometer operator, and another was she got a job down in Los Angeles. And went to California. I looked at it, and worked in telephone office for a long time.
Well, how did people react to a boy who had been in the war coming to back to high school? Were you a hero then? You did. I see, received a French medal for your wound. Did you?
Oh, that's citation. We didn't
somewhere I wrote down the meaning of your award, but I don't remember. But it was a French award, was it not?
Citation.
Oh, oh dear.
Oh dear. Citation for honor.
I didn't get a purple heart. I already got that. So.
Signed by Woodrow Wilson.
Yeah.
Well, how did your fellow students react when they had someone among them who had been in the war?
They didn't react. They took granted us to come back and get back and came back also. The others who had been seniors, and I was just sophomores, the seniors just got credit for it and were able to graduate. Get back and I came back and went to school. I think he was junior and I was just a sophomore. So we got credit for our sophomore years. And I went back as a junior and I spent 2 years in high school. And I found out during this time that I would be an elder for what was called rehabilitation. And so the man come along from the Pettus administration, he tried to get rid of it. He thought I should go into engineering. So he put in there. Well, I didn't think about it at some of the time. Well, what I want to do, I had a chance to go to college. Because of the disability, the government rehabilitated me, extended a 4-year college course. So I gave this considerable thought. I talked to a bit, my professor, the principal of the school, V.W. Barnes. And at that time I was working part-time for Dr. Smith at his hospital, which he had there in Millville.
What were you doing for him?
Janitor. And I was working nice in the telephone office, but the people I talked to at B.W. Barnes, Dr. Smith, encouraged me to go into medicine. They thought I would have to do all right in medicine. I wondered if I would or not. But Dr. Smith thought that was an aptitude I used to, even while I was working there for him, and sometimes assisting in surgery or something like that. I showed some aptitude. We had permitted hospitals, sick and needed to be in one. VW1, so they had skills in mathematical skills, so forth. I was a good mathematician. And he thought it was one of the scientific courses, and he thought it would do all right in medicine. So I decided that I asked the administration if they would give me 4 years to join the medical degree. They said, yes, they would. So, we went down to the University of Oregon. We met. Finished there, I got to the University of Oregon Medical School. And after I finished that was a 3-year pre-med course. After my first year in medical school, then I completed my 4 years of training. Veterans Bureau said that they had consider my case. They asked me if I was rehabilitated. I said, no, I wasn't. I was thinking I could do. And he said, well, says, you better keep on. And then we go and finish 4 years, just a few more years of medical school for the veteran administration. So that was quite nice.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, after the next war, that they give all the veterans GI Bill, right? I'm sure to have college education, which is a fine thing. They discovered in through this thing that it's better to educate the veterans when they want it and make better citizens of it. That was a good policy. A good thing.
While we're on the subject, some time ago I did some research on medical school, so I want to ask you about, for example, was Dr. McKenzie there when
you
arrived?
No.
Was Dean Baird there?
Yes, Dean Baird. He was there. Dean Baird was a resident there. They'd just been up there a short time. Mm-hmm. They must have been about 19. Yeah. There's still stumps standing around the school.
Mm-hmm. How many were in your class?
45.
Were you working when you were going to medical
school
at all?
No. Well, I was getting reimbursement, drawing a monthly stipend and medical position. And then I'd gotten married by still on university, and so I got extra money because of the marriage. So I did arrive.
So did you meet Mrs. Pittman at the University of Oregon, or did she come down there, or how about that?
No, I met her while I was still in high school. She was going to Portland High School, but she had a friend that lived across the street from Baggerville, being a shoot. That's right across the street. Once you found this member, it went much greater.
What was Mrs. Pittman's maiden name?
Gardner.
So you did live in Portland, I take it, when you were going to medical school. Or did you live here?
Well, I lived in Portland part of the time, but shortly after we bought a little place out here in Tim, her folks' farm out there.
Near where?
Quatema. It's just a mile down the track. One little house, there's a carpenter just finished it roughly. And I bought from him and finished it up in frame windows and things and sealed it inside. Finish it up and it was livable. And we stayed there at least most of the year, maybe in the wintertime, we might move in the apartment. could drive back and forth to school from there.
Was the electric running?
Yeah, I used to go in the Oregon Electric train. Mm-hmm. I would get a 6:30 train in the morning, of course. And get home much of the time of the day. There were several trains a day ran, so it was a good service.
What did your family think about your desire to become a doctor?
Well, of course, they were quite pleased with it. Surprised when I decided to do it.
Had your folks ever spoken to you about becoming a doctor at any point, or influenced you in any way?
Mm-hmm. I was just sitting and waiting myself.
Now, did Mrs. Pittman work when you were going to school?
She did for a time. And she worked with old Dr. Tucker in his office for a time. Not sure how much longer I was. She worked for several months.
Now you said you entered in 1921, so you graduated then in 25.
I graduated in 28.
Oh, yeah.
No, I went to Eugene in 21.
Okay, yeah. You graduated in 28 from the U of O. And what interested you in medical school? Was there any particular specialty that interested you at that point?
And I decided that I would go into dental practice, and after 4 or 5 years would specialize in the poor. But after I got involved in it, I decided to stay right there. I liked it. This is dental practice.
Why did you decide to come to Hillsborough in the first place? Did you like the location or the people? Was there a need out here for a doctor?
No, there's no need. No vacancy to step into it. But I made a tour of the state. I'd heard of places like Central Oregon.
Then?
Right down in the center of the state, the district. Well, it's 150 miles, 130 miles east of Bend.
East of Bend.
Not
Gill? Gillcrest?
No, that's south. Right to east, Burns.
Oh, Burns.
Burns, yeah. Mm-hmm. I heard about Burns. And so we went over there. That time, Nancy was born. She was about a year old. And we drove across that ditch from Bend to Burns. And it was just a wagon tracks out in the sagebrush. Got about halfway down and started the waiting road to improve the physical pavement. where the food establishment was never, because that was dusty. It just thick dust. And eventually, I think it was a 9-hour trip to get from end to burn through the dust. I was quite discouraged with the town. It might have been a good opportunity to practice there, but I didn't like it. So we went on the next day, I got went on, and the place moved me and looked